You're listening to coverage from the 2008 Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show.
Just west of where it rains and just north of the last UFO sighting in Stephenville, many of you may have heard about. I put up here kind of an outline of what we want to cover today in ranch bovine respiratory disease control, and have that listed here. We're going to review some of the goals and objectives of a BRD control program. I'm going to emphasize the importance of maternal immunity in acquiring these goals. We'll discuss BVD control at the ranch, the importance of early vaccination, some new information about what we can do in vaccinating calves at an early age. We'll talk about pre-weaning vaccinations, weaning vaccinations, and some options for lower-cost weaning programs. So starting with goals and objectives, I think if we look at the goals and objectives of a ranch BRD control program, we can break it up into three key components. Number one is we want to prevent BRD at the ranch level, and usually that's minimal. Many ranches experience no respiratory disease. It's usually after they leave the ranch, but certainly there are situations where that's a problem. We want to be able to meet marketing goals. Certainly there's many vaccination programs, VAC 34, VAC 45, different depending on how cattle are marketed. We want to be able to meet those marketing goals. And then we want to minimize BRD at whatever destination the calves are headed for. I like to think of our approach from a ranch level much like we look at our approach to overall biosecurity, and that's establishing a series of hurdles to bovine respiratory disease. And here I have as the key components of that, or the key categories that we're trying to put up hurdles with, is our maternal immunity, calf vaccination, and stress reduction. Here's some well-conditioned Hereford cows in the Big Bend area of Texas. You can see the Choya cactus in the background, good grass. I don't know if it looks like that now, but a couple years ago they'd had some rains and it looked really good. Dr. Louis Perino, who many of you have heard, he's one of my heroes. He's now an MD. He's no longer working actively in veterinary medicine, but he did some pioneer work with colostrum. Many of you have heard him speak. But this statement, I think, speaks volumes about how we want to manage respiratory disease at the ranch. He says acquisition of maternal immunity is the single most important factor influencing the risk of infectious morbidity and mortality prior to weaning. Now, in addition to that, there's data to show that we can also impact respiratory morbidity and mortality after weaning from good colostral management. And in this study from Whittem and Perino, they showed that cattle were three times more likely to become sick in the feedlot if they had inadequate passive transfer. There are also a number of dairy studies that have looked at long-term effects of inadequate passive transfer. Now, recently I ran across this study. It was published in 1995, but I hadn't seen it before. And basically what they did in this study is they looked at the difference in performance between brown Swiss calves that received either 2 liters or 4 liters of colostrum within the first hour of birth. And what they showed is those calves that just received the 2 liters, their veterinary cost doubled in those calves just from the difference in 2 liters and 4 liters. Those fed 4 liters also gained significantly greater, and they produced over 1,200 pounds of actual milk, more than those given 2 liters. And when you put it to a dollar amount, it represented about $160 per cow difference if the calves received 2 liters versus 4. Now, obviously, that's a dairy study, and you might say, well, what does that have to do with how I manage my cattle operation? I think from a cow-calf perspective, when we're looking at trying to manage colostrum and avoiding inadequate passive transfer, we have to understand what are the risk factors and what are the risk factors that we can modify to decrease the chances of inadequate passive transfer. Such things as dystocia management, culling cows with bad udders, having good nutritional status, good trace mineral status, particularly selenium, copper, zinc. And then finally, there's many things listed here, but vaccination of the dam is an important way to improve colostral quantity and quality, and also hopefully help with decreasing respiratory morbidity and mortality in those calves. Now, this may appear like a stretch, and I'm going to put several slides up that may seem like a stretch, but this is the way I like to think. Could selecting bulls with low birth weight and calving these EPDs decrease respiratory morbidity and mortality? And I think it's easy to make the steps necessary to say, yes, that is a possibility. So when you're making those decisions on the ranch, those decisions that you think are just related to something like having a small calf so you get a live calf, it really is much more than that. And it may impact how well that calf is going to perform for its lifetime. Now, a topic that's been discussed quite a bit recently and that I think is extremely exciting is fetal programming. Just a little brief background on fetal programming. It really started in the 1940s. There was a town in Western Holland that was under blockade from the Germans, and after the war, there was an epidemiological study that was done with women that were pregnant during that blockade time period. And they found that babies that were born to those women had normal birth weights, but when they followed them throughout for a long period after that, they found that there was a much greater degree of obesity, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and cardiovascular disease. So there were long-term effects with just the nutritional care that the women had during pregnancy. Now, there's been fetal programming studies done with sheep and with swine, and recently there's been some published with cattle. Now, this doesn't relate directly to respiratory morbidity and mortality, but hopefully we'll be able to do some research in the future to see if there even could be a link. But in this study that was published recently, it was in Nebraska, they had cows that were supplemented in the last trimester of pregnancy with 1 pound of 42% crude protein or no supplement. And what they showed that it didn't impact the birth weight of the calves, but the heifer calves born to those cows had heavier weaning weights, had higher reproductive performance, and had less problems at calving. So going back to that relatively simple management input of applying 1 pound of 42% crude protein impacted reproductive performance of those cows, heifer calves. Now, the studies hadn't been done yet to look and see how does that impact respiratory morbidity and mortality. So you may say, why am I throwing this in? Well, I think it all ties in with maternal immunity, maternal health. How we manage that cow herd can have some long-term implications on how calves perform. The Iowa Tri-County Steer Carcass Futurity has collected a lot of data over the years that I think is very valuable. This is some information about the impact of disposition or docility. And they showed that when they group these steers into either docile, restless, or aggressive, there were differences in their performance in terms of average daily gain, the ability to grade. The calm steers were twice as likely to gain CAB status versus aggressive steers. And there was about a $62.19 per head difference in those steers that were calm versus those that were aggressive. If you look at death loss, there was a higher death loss in the aggressive steers as well. Recently, there was a study at Texas A&M, and this was an exceed study where they looked at the impact of exceed on arrival, on respiratory morbidity and mortality, feed intake, and so forth. And there was a surprising finding from that study in that they found that the excitable steers, those that had a high exit velocity, had a much greater response to the antibiotic administration in calm steers. So there was an interaction between temperament and metaphylactic treatment. So apparently there was more, or we think there was probably more respiratory, subclinical respiratory disease in those excitable steers. Recently, the American Angus Association has released docility EPDs. And we know that sire docility heritability is moderate to high, so this is a tool that we can use. And again, this is a management tool. It's not just to have calm cattle, but we know that calm cattle perform better. Calm cattle are less likely to get sick when they leave the ranch as well. I wanted to just say a few things about DVD control, and certainly we've had so many discussions about DVD. I'm sure all of you are very versed in how DVD occurs, but I just wanted to emphasize that if we're going to eradicate DVD, we need to focus on the ranch level. I'm not criticizing the fact that we're testing a lot of cattle after leaving the ranch. Certainly there's some impact there, but we get the most bang for our buck if we can test cattle appropriately at the ranch level. And I think from a BVD standpoint, every ranch should have some kind of a BVD risk analysis. If you have excellent reproductive performance and good records, then there's really no reason to probably worry about doing a lot of testing within your herd. You can use a good pre-breeding respiratory vaccine, as well as with obviously BVD respiratory vaccine, and test new arrivals, and that's probably all you need to do in that particular situation. But if you're having some reduced reproductive performance, then certainly you need to look at either whole herd or selective herd testing for BVD. And the key is protecting that fetus, keeping that heifer or cow immunized with a good vaccination program prior to breeding. In terms of vaccination and preparing the calves prior to leaving the ranch, I want to start first with early vaccination, or what we typically call in the West branding time. This is a time when we can prime those calves and have the opportunity for them to develop a memory response and then respond with a more robust immune response later on. Here we're talking about respiratory viral vaccination with modified live or temperature-sensitive modified live IBR PI3, modified live BRSV, and either modified live or killed BVD with products that are labeled for calves nursing pregnant cows. This is an opportunity to prime the pump, if you will. And when I say early vaccination, I mainly am referring to calves that are older than a week but less than 4 months of age. When I graduated from veterinary school in 1980, we were taught that it really did very little good to vaccinate these young calves with respiratory vaccines due to maternal antibody blockage. Well, the way we were measuring that, though, was simply with the serum antibody titer test, and we won't see serum antibody titer responses necessarily due to maternal antibody blockage, but there's much more to it than that. There's the creation of memory response. There's the creation of cell-mediated immunity. So some more recent work over the last 10 to 15 years has shown that early vaccination may very well have value in preventing not only calfhood bovine respiratory disease, but also allow those calves to respond better at weaning. Last fall at the AABP meeting in Vancouver, Dr. Willems from University of Georgia gave a really good talk on vaccinating calves in the face of maternal antibody, and she reviewed all the literature that was out there and basically came to the conclusion that although you won't see the increase in serum antibody titer, we do show T-cell activation and cell-mediated responses in this priming for memory that I've mentioned earlier. So there is benefit in early vaccinating these calves. Now one issue that you may have heard about is this antigen interference theory that we have, and I think it's more than a theory. There's a paper published out of Canada about 10 years ago, and basically what it showed is that if you give a modified live IBR vaccine and a Mannheimia or Pastorella vaccine at the same time, and it's the first time you've given that Pastorella vaccine, then the body's immune system responds more to the modified live than it does to that Bacterin, and you may not get the immune response to the Bacterin that you'd hope to get. And so one recommendation is to avoid giving a modified live IBR and a Pastorella vaccine, if it's the first time it's done, to avoid doing that the first time. Now, I think this is another good reason why we want to vaccinate these young calves, because if we vaccinate them with a modified live IBR combination product when they're very young, then if we come back and use that pastorella pre-weaning or at weaning, we don't have to worry about this interference issue that may occur. Now, I put a few slides in here on early castration, and I think this has a tremendous impact on respiratory morbidity and mortality after they leave the ranch, so I think it certainly merits talking about here. We know that with early castration, we have improved gains post-weaning, less morbidity, less treatment costs. There's even studies to show higher carcass quality. And I think something that we're all going to have to think about much more in the future is reduced welfare issues that are posed from late castration. There are a lot of people looking at our industry right now, particularly with just what's happened at the slaughter facility in California, and we're going to be under even more scrutiny in the future. And I don't think there's any question that the earlier we can castrate these calves, the easier it is on the animals. Now, there's several studies that document the impact of castration after arrival on morbidity and mortality, primarily from respiratory disease. This study that I'm showing here was a Stocker study, and they showed that there was a 10.3% loss in season-long gain in calves that were castrated on arrival versus calves that arrived as steers. And there was a 60% morbidity rate on the bulls versus 28% on steers. Now, my good friend and colleague, Dr. Jerry Stucka, did this study at Kansas State. It's unpublished, but I know Jerry, and I know the data must be good. But the odds ratio is 2.14, which means that there's over a two times greater likelihood that bull calves would experience respiratory morbidity versus steers. And then some earlier work by Zinn in California showed similar results. Here the morbidity for steers was 26.7% versus 61.8% for bull calves. And then carrying that on beyond a 28-day period, this was a study to close out, and these animals didn't make up for the difference that was lost earlier. There was still a net negative effect of minus 11% of bull calves over steer calves. So I don't think there's any question that we need to castrate steers or bulls as early as possible, and it does have a positive impact on reducing respiratory morbidity and mortality. Now, when is the best time to vaccinate calves prior to leaving the ranch, there's no question that if you can do it 3 to 4 weeks prior to weaning, at that pre-weaning time period, that's the best from an immunologic standpoint. And that's just the basic rule of immunology. We want to try to vaccinate just prior to the maximum exposure that the animals are going to have. And I realize that's a very difficult thing to do in many operations, but I think it certainly has some merit. We need to think about if there's any possible way we can do that in our operations. There's some benefits. Now, over the last 12 to 13 years, Pfizer Animal Health has sponsored a study with Colorado State University and Superior Livestock looking at the price differentials between VAC 34, VAC 45, all the different VAC programs versus non-viral vaccinated calves. And in 2007, we had the highest price differential for VAC 34 we've ever had, $4.68 per hundredweight. That translates to over $26 advantage per calf just for vaccinating those calves one time prior to sale. And there's no weaning involved in this program, just a 3 to 4 week time period that they're vaccinated prior to shipment. And I use some very conservative cost estimates here. Most of you could vaccinate these calves for less than $3, and the labor cost, I put at $2 per head. And even at those very conservative numbers, you're still looking at a greater than 5-to-1 return on investment if you receive that $4.68 per hundredweight premium. Now, there's a new program that's being talked about more, and that's the VAC 34 Plus. And what VAC 34 Plus is, it's basically the same as VAC 34, except there's an additional viral vaccine. You could say calves that were vaccinated early at branding and then vaccinated again 3 to 4 weeks prior to weaning, they would qualify for VAC 34 Plus. We really don't have any good data to show how these cattle are going to perform in relation to VAC 45 or VAC 34 calves, but hopefully over time we'll be able to look at price differentials and look at performance of these calves, and this may be an alternative for people who aren't able to wean. And then the Cadillac program for preparing calves for leaving the ranch is the VAC 45 program, 45-day wean period. Two options, either pre-wean wean or wean post-wean, two respiratory virals, a manhymia. Some programs require dewormers, some not. But this is the Cadillac program. I wanted to review the pre-shipment vaccination program data that we've collected from Superior over the last 12 years. And I think really when we look at these programs, we need to begin to look at them more as a ticket for market entry, not a premium program, but what do we need to do to play in certain markets. And I think we've definitely moved in that direction. If we look at the data in the Superior sales over the last 12 to 13 years, we can see there's a very positive trend upward for VAC 45, and then, as I showed earlier, VAC 34 really shot up this year as well. Three out of the last 4 years, the VAC 45 calves have brought almost $8 per hundred weight more than calves that were not weaned. And one of the most encouraging pieces of data for me is if we look back at 1995 when the data first began to be collected, almost 50%